pretty open here. Talk about anything and everything. So
it's aggravating.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Well, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to Angry Nation Podcast. And tonight we've got a special guest, you guys. This is gonna be fun. We got Joe Tedi on board with us tonight. How you doing, Joe?
Long time no see, brother.
It has been a hot minute. Yeah, I guess you and T have been doing some scheming on a few things, and I was like, what the hell? Let's get him in here tonight. And so obviously we've got T with us, and we have Sue, who looks like he's coming to us from witness protection. Yeah, from witness protection or something down there. And
seen him jump back there on that piano. Sing us a little tune, man. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go, Sue.
I would, but it's
that may be grand. I bet you can tickle those keys.
It's a virtual background. I don't want my wife to know I'm in the cat house right now, because I'll be in the dog house the rest of the month.
That's so good, the virtual background. I freaking love it.
Love it. Man, the place looks pimp. It's like the Playboy Mansion you're sitting in or something.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
You don't leave evidence on the table when you've been divorced 5 times.
Yeah. Oh, Sue's wives follow him around like CSI trying to track down a serial killer, you know. As far as him picking up clues, he's getting better at it over the years. So, but I think now that I think the one that he's married to now, I think that's the one that's gonna, keep him tethered. We'll say,
take him out, one of the two.
All you young men out there, you got to find a woman that puts up with your crap, and then life will be happy.
Yeah,
do we lose Joe?
Oh.
Disappeared for a second. He'll come back.
They found us already. It didn't take them long.
They found us already.
The censorship. Wait, we're 2 minutes, 30 seconds in. We're good. Yeah, was that?
Wow, was that, everybody.
Facebook again.
Losing everybody and everything, it looks like.
Well, we've had I'm looking forward to the mountain readiness thing. I got a bunch of guests coming in. We'll be heading out your way, T.
Awesome.
Probably Wednesday.
Sweet.
Or Thursday. I'm sorry. Russ is staying at my house. He's the last one to come in. And then we'll all convoy to the campground on Thursday.
There we go.
Boom.
Yeah, so I've had a lot of rain. You guys have a lot of rain out there. It's probably going to be pretty muddy. Strong. And now it's muddy.
It hasn't been too bad. Hasn't been too bad, Sue.
Yeah. I've sat in the house for 3 days. I caught up on a bunch of reading and everything. Read a great book called The Assassination Attempt of George Washington by Brad Metzer. You ever read that one? Great book. I mean, it really resonated with me and what's and going on with current events, with all this strife on the universities and people fighting each other. There's plenty of enemies, but we got to remember our forefathers, they had to come together in a common goal too, because, the revolution started in New England. We had the center of the colonies, Virginia and the Carolinas. And then of course we had Georgia, who just tagging along and just kind of a fledgling colony in themselves. But, I think what struck me most about that was there was an assassin. After Washington took over the army, he kind of brought some cannons down from Ticonderoga. I get the word right.
That's easy for you to say.
Yeah, that upstate New York. He brought him. That actual General Knox brought him down.
Ticonderoga.
And they snuck up on the heights over Boston. They snuck them in there in one night, and the British looked up there and said, "Oh, we're in a precarious situation here," and they abandoned Boston, which really motivated all the colonists and everything to kind of join the fray. And remember the Continental Congress or the Provincial Congress at the time, they were still looking to negotiate with the British, stay under British rule. They didn't really want to go to war. Bunker Hill had already happened, which is really Breed's Hill. But anyway, Washington picked up the army and moved them down to New York. And William Tryon, the governor of New York, from the British governor, went out on a ship next to a warship in the harbor of New York. And so Washington's in there, and he's got his Continental Army in there. And Tryon, through the mayor of New York, it isn't amazing how everything always happens in New York for Tryon's paying off all these people and creating spy networks, things like that. And he even paid off some of the elite guard that Washington had put around him. He had about 50 elite troops that were his bodyguard, or his the general's guard. And this plot was all found out when a few guys forging paper money,
counterfeiters.
They were counterfeiting, they've had some forging plates and stuff like that. Well, the Provincial Congress caught these guys making 4-shilling notes from Connecticut, and the whole plot kind of fell apart. And we keep on losing Joe, but that was actually the beginning of American counterintelligence and intelligence gathering and stuff like that. But one of the guards thought, well, we need to make an example of this guy. And they hung him. They took him out in public and they hung him on June 28, 1776. And the Provincial Congress the Congress there in New York, they thought, well, this will bring the people of New York together because the British warships are starting to come in. And it looks like we're going to have
it. I'm having a problem with my internet, guys. Sorry. There's a storm. So I'm doing the best I can. Just cut away again.
Yeah. Well, I was just talking about, you just left. I was talking about the first intel and counter intel with General Washington, the Continental Army around the port of New York there. And they actually hung one of Washington's guards, a guy named Hickey, William Hickey. And he used to be in the British Army, deserter. He was a real good soldier. They found out that he'd been bought off by Governor Tryon, and so they actually made an example of him. They gave him a public execution and hung him. And Washington, everybody thought that they told Washington, "Will this bring the people together, and the colonists will get together, and they'll have the fortitude to fight this upcoming battle?" And they're like, "No." Washington's like, "No, we need something to bring all the colonies together. We have several enemies we're fighting, whether it be the Indians or the British, or just like we have today, but we need one bottom line theme." And it was just a week later, exactly on that same day, on June 28th, 1776, down in Philadelphia, the Continental Congress had just approved the first draft of the Declaration of Independence. And when the copy of it was given to George Washington, he got the army back together on the same place where they hung Hickey, and he had his adjutant general read the Declaration of Independence, and it got a standing ovation from the entire, from all the citizens of the Continental Army.
Hell yeah.
So that's kind of what I'd like to remind everybody. I'm sorry, that's a long story and everything, but when we're talking about mountain readiness and everything, and everybody just laughs at preppers or homesteaders and stuff like that, and said, "Well, the conservatives or Republicans, they can never get together on one thing." I'd like to remind all of us out there that if we just did away with every single law out there besides the Constitution, the Constitution's still worth fighting for. And it's something that really need to look at. I was sworn to it for 30 years in the Army, and I, that Constitution, you know, that oath to the Constitution means something to me.
And I think it
means something to all of us, you know.
Yep.
Or at least it should.
Yeah, anyway, go ahead, Chris. That was my lead in.
No, I like it. It's good to
for us all getting together.
How we got here.
It's like the mountain readiness exercise. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. What I thought was really interesting too, that it's more of a side note, but I was reading, they were talking about, you know, the term limits for our current situations of the people of the higher powers that be. And during that time frame, all of our forefathers were in their 20s. Mm-hmm. I didn't really put the two and two together. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you think about the Constitution and what they wrote and put together, these were guys that were 25 and down. You know, look at 25-year-olds in this day and age is doing good. They're finding their ass with both hands and not be living at home and hold down a job. These people were writing, they were writing the Constitution.
Let's remind everybody, the Declaration of Independence was wrote by a 30-year-old Virginian named Thomas Jefferson. Right.
Yes.
It was revised.
Was he actually 30?
Yeah, he was 30 years old. And it was,
30 years old.
It was revised four times before it was finally ratified or approved by the Continental Congress. But after the war was over, 7 years, 8 years later, it took 11 years to agree on the Constitution. 11 years. So think about that. That's 20 years. So Thomas Jefferson, who was at the time, he was the ambassador to France. He didn't even get a vote on it. But he was reading draft copies of it. They were sending over by ship to him while he was in France. And he's like, hey, we need a bunch of amendments to this that protect individual rights. And that's where the first 10 amendments, or, you know, the first 10 amendments we call the Bill of Rights, that's where they came from, you know. So there's individual rights, and the Constitution is basically, okay, here's how the government's going to run. And the amendments, especially the first 10, people need to hold those dear. And that's worth fighting for, you know. And that, like I've seen this podcast several times, everybody says, well, First Amendment rights, First Amendment right, free speech. And I say, well, what's the other four things in the First Amendment? And they can't, they don't even know it. They don't know.
None of them.
So
none of them.
I guarantee if people would read the Constitution, they would say, yeah, it's one common theme that we'd all could stand on and say, this is worth standing up for, is the Constitution of the United States.
If everybody would just stop trying to interpret it.
Right.
And just take it as it's read. It's pretty simple. Pretty simple language there, you know. Joe, I see the internet's giving you hell out there in the boonies with the storm, dude. But we got you back, I think, for a few minutes, I hope.
Maybe.
We might have lost him again.
He said his volume is doing a bunch of weird stuff, too. So,
okay.
Unfortunately, this may be a bad connection for this one here. Hopefully that storm rolls through. I don't know where that thing's. I didn't even know we had a storm going through North Carolina, but it appears that we do.
All right, Sue, here's a question for you. I'm going to put up on the screen there from Justin saying, have you heard about a seal that was also in the French Foreign Legion that's making the rounds on the circuit? I guess training maybe. What made you join the Legion back in the day?
That's a good question, right? I just mentioned my love for the Constitution, and I joined the French Foreign Legion basically because I got kicked out of Ranger School for beating up an officer. And
That'll do it every time.
And then I got kicked out of the Rangers, and instead of reenlisting and staying, you know, 90 days later, I was out of the Army. I did my first 4 years and everything. So I end up reading about the French Foreign Legion and Soldier of Fortune magazines, but that's not the reason I went to Europe. I went to Europe to become a mercenary. There was no contractors. It was called mercenary.
Reading SOF, answering ads in the back of SOF.
Soldier of Fortune, Colonel Brown. Yeah. So I ran over to Belgium and
Hell yeah.
I answered this advertisement in the back of the magazine. and they were going to send me to Sri Lanka, and they couldn't give me a rundown on who side I was on, how I'd get paid, nothing, you know, what my job was going to be. And this was on a Friday. I said, let me come back Monday, and I'll make my decision. I'll give you my decision Monday. So I jumped back on the train and went down to Paris. And I hit the red light district and all the bars and everything down there in Paris. And Sunday morning, you know, after spending all my money on booze and women and wasting the rest, I saw this poster for the French Foreign Legion. And I really didn't have the money to go back to Belgium. And I just looked at that poster and I told the taxi driver, said, take me there.
Holy shit.
That's how I ended up in the French Foreign Legion. Needless to say, it was quite an experience. The French Foreign Legion back in 1985, 86 was not a good place to be if you like being a good soldier. But I had gone AWOL and everything. I remember about 9 months later, I was sitting in what we called the NIC. It's the brig or CCF is what they call it in the American Army. It's jail. I was sitting in jail. And after I did my 10-day solitary confinement, I was sitting at lunch with a bunch of people and I was getting a bunch of crap from the guy running the jail. And I was like, I lost my temper and I was like, I don't have to take this. I'm an American. And a British guy laughed at me. And because I said it in English, of course, but the guy laughed at me and said, you're the French Foreign Legion. Nobody cares what your rights are in America. And that was a profound moment for me. It really was. It really And I realized what a mistake I had made by joining a foreign army or a foreign flag. And it wasn't too much longer that I actually left. I think 5 months later, I left the French Foreign Legion for good after the bombing in Tripoli and things like that. A lot of politics back then. Francis Mitterrand made Jimmy Carter look like a warmonger.
Yeah. You
know, I wanted to get back to the land of Ronald Reagan. So I went back. I went back and I got back to the United States and they said, oh, you can never have a, you know, they being the State Department. I got into New Jersey. I think I flew into Newark, New Jersey. They took me back into State Department, pulled my passport, took me back into an office and said, what are you doing in the French Foreign Legion? You know, it's illegal what you did. Jimmy Carter made being a mercenary illegal. And so they knew about me before, as soon as I got off the plane. But they said, and I was like, well, you got an island where, you know, me and Benedict Arnold can hang out, you know, if I'm such a traitor to the States. I'm like, no, you just can't ever have a passport again. You're never allowed to travel again.
Oh shit.
I was like, okay, no big deal. But I remember what that British guy laughing at me when I was sitting there in the nick. And I was like, you know what? He's exactly right. You know, France is a socialist country. You know, all the countries in Europe were socialists.
Yeah.
I picked up a copy of the Constitution and I actually read it this time, you know, before raising my right hand and swearing an oath to it. So the next time I went back to the Army, I had that Constitution memorized. And I told all those young kids, you know, before you raise your right hand, how many amendments are in the Constitution? And like, oh, I don't know. I was in high school. You better read this Constitution. Because you're about ready to say, I will defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And there's a reason it's in sequential order. And the President of the United States, and then the officers appointed over me, right? So bottom line, every soldier, every law enforcement officer, every congressman is sworn to that Constitution. And it just... It rips my heart out to see it, to see people that blatantly disregard that and don't follow that Constitution.
Yeah. We're going to try Joe on audio only. Joe, are you out there now with just audio, brother? Let's give it a shot. I don't hear.
I'm not sure. He's been texting me. He said he can't hear nothing on his end. It's looking like it's all jacked up there with the storm, unfortunately.
Well, to answer the question, I've met many Americans who've served in the French Foreign Legion since the 80s. Remember, my time was 85, 86, right? And I kind of avoid France now because I still owe them about, you know, almost 4 years.
So. Yeah, you do.
It's a 5 year, when you join the Constitution or the French Foreign Legion, it's a 5 year contract, right? So yeah, I've met.
I forgot people. About Soldier of Fortune magazine. That was yeah. Man, I used to buy that all the time when I was a kid.
Yeah, Robert K. Brown. Yeah.
Hey, hey, Patrick Seven. I'll hit you off on that other place after we get off here to talk about that situation.
Yeah. But no, the French Foreign Legion's actually gotten better, from what I hear. From what I and I've worked with them since then. And I've seen them. You know, I saw them in Bosnia. I saw them in Turkey. I saw them in Somalia. So yeah, they've really picked up their game a little bit, got better, a lot better equipment than what we had. That's when, and I, you know, remember I told you that my last years in the Army, I was doing weapons for the special operations and, you know, this next generation squad automatic weapon that Sig Sauer just won. General Dynamics came in with a bullpup and I was a consultant for True Velocity, the ammunition. They were the ammunition variant they were teaming up with General Dynamics on. And I told those engineers at General Dynamics, I was like, look, you're never going to get an American to like a bullpup. Nope. They're like, well, how would you know? You've never actually used one. I said, well, back in 85 and 86, I actually carried a FAMAS. And I hated it so bad that I volunteered to be the machine gunner.
And what did they give you?
Not anywhere, not that overrated pistol of a bullpup called the FAMAS.
What they gave you? What is it, the melee or the
it was a it was called the AA-52, a 7.5 millimeter machine gun, and the version I had still had the cloth belt. Remember, it
didn't have yeah. No disintegrating links, cloth belt. Holy cloth shit, belt. Yeah, that's 1940s era technology, cloth belts, Especially 1930s technology, cloth belts would be.
Well, I was driving around vehicles. I was also a driver, and I was driving around vehicles of a Dodge 6x6, spare tire sitting next to the driver, and they were given to France after World War II. You know, they didn't want to bring them back to the States, so they said, here you go, France, you can have these.
Oh, shit.
That's most fun. Of the M2 carbines. Remember the M2 carbine?
The side-folding airborne select fire Williams
or Charlie Williams here in North Carolina. He was actually in prison when he invented that carbine, and got a pardon and everything. But that's an awesome little weapon, not very big. And it
Charlie Williams what?
The 30 cal pill. Yeah, well, not the Charlie Williams we're talking about. This is a different Charlie.
Oh,
Williams.
I was like, dude, what?
No, but this 30 cal bullet is only, this 30 cal bullet was only like this big, right?
Yeah.
And they carried it in World War II. And didn't have any, you couldn't get any range out of a little M2 carbine, you know.
No.
But it was a perfect weapon for Vietnam. And the French Foreign Legion took them and gave them. When they tried to recolonize Vietnam, the French Foreign Legion and the French Army were carrying a bunch of, they were wearing American helmets. They were wearing, they were using the M2 carbine. Oh, that storm must have hit T now.
I guess now T's out. So, yeah. And I'm the M2
dominating everything with my wealth of useless knowledge.
Yeah, I'm actually enjoying this because the M2 was the select fire variant of those. And they considered the para, I remember right. Yeah, it was the para. There he is. So I used to have I had an M1 carbine made
working
by
Inland. Working hard. I don't know what the hell.
Made by Inland Manufacturing. So, yeah, little carbines are fun to shoot. No recoil. Like, you can shoot that thing all day long.
It's a perfect weapon for, you know, the short distances we have where T and I live, in the Appalachians and the foothills. All this undergrowth, and you still get a 30 caliber projectile. And, you know, it's good for about 200 yards, maybe.
Yeah, about right.
Yeah, that's about all you're going to get around here for sure.
Yeah.
And that's not even a horizontal shot.
30-06 is about what you need around here to cut brush. This place is a jungle, man.
Yeah. You need a heavier projectile. Those AR-15s that guys try to hunt with around there. I just kind of shake my head at them. You realize your 55 grain or your 68 grain bullet, as soon as it hits a leaf, it's going sideways. It's not going anywhere near that target.
Yep.
It's going too fast. It's not heavy enough.
The minimum for, I have a bolt action 223, but it's only because it belonged to a cousin of mine that passed away. So I took it. It's a beautiful rifle and I still got hand loads for it and stuff. And I would shoot a deer with it down here, but I would only head shoot a deer with that rifle. And I know I can do it with that rifle. If I'm out deer hunting in general, though, I'm taking a Browning, I've got a 308 X bolt. That's what I'm going to take out of the woods deer hunt with. So, cause I think that's the minimum for me for deer hunting. Would be the 308 or maybe the
30-30. Yeah, 30-30, 30-06, 308. That's my go-to on the hunting rifles for around here.
Yeah.
Well, back when I was doing, they were trying to, they're talking about the 6.8 caliber now, which is basically a 277 if you convert it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The army's looking at going to, but that was partly me. I would go to the Pentagon and I would take the hunting at the time. I was stationed in Colorado, born in Colorado, but I was stationed there in Fort Carson, and I did briefings at the Pentagon where I brought in the hunting rules for Colorado, and I told them straight up. I said, I have several stepsons, but I have one biological son who wants to join the army. Why would I let him go to war? And I'd pull out a 5.56 round or 223 and say, why would I want him to go to war against AK-47s using shooting a round that, and I'd take out the hunting laws of Colorado and say that you can't hunt mule deer with in Colorado. It's 270 and above in Colorado. Yep. So if I can't bring down, if my son can't bring down a terrorist with one shot, Why am I going to allow him to join the army?
Anybody shot that 6.8? Anybody shot that 6.8 yet? I saw some ballistics on it here the other day that looked pretty nasty.
I had shot.
I'm worried that, we talk about, the high price for the defense bill right now. But that ammunition is a bimetal case. It's steel on the bottom, brass in the cut, and it's got a rivet on it. Puts it together. So just the manufacturing of the case alone is going to be super expensive. But the reason they do that is so it won't break apart. They're getting very high muzzle velocities out of that. The chamber pressure increased.
So chamber pressure is why they have to do that way.
Yes, the chamber pressure increased about 80,000, so it means your muzzle velocity is much higher, much faster than a 5.56, and it's a bigger round, So they're busting 3,400 feet per second. Now, why does the Army want to do that? And I don't want to call it laziness, but what they're trying to do is look for the ultimate trajectory. That they don't have to train the soldiers very much to put a red dot or put a crosshair on a target anywhere out to 350, 400 meters, and that will hit somewhere in a 2-foot radius, a 2-foot box. So that's why they want to go. That's why they want to go to this new 6.8. They're looking for a flat trajectory, and you don't have to, send soldiers to the range a couple times and. That they think that they can increase the probability hit on the battlefield. That's the reason for that, T.
Gotcha. Yeah, Keith over there, 300 Win Mag for hunting. Definitely, I'm a fan. 300 Win Mag's a nice round to reach out and touch.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still 308 down here because you're not going to get that long. I mean, you can get a 1,000-meter shot in Florida, but it's uncommon. And a 308 will kill anything that lives on this peninsula. I'm good with 308.
Yep.
And Justin Stevens, I'll be around Carl's classes, but I don't know how much or exactly how long I'll be around. But I'll be around part of it because we got to get back. We got stuff to do. So.
Yeah, and I learned. I'm the same way, Chris. I'm a 308 guy. Grew up with 308. Been 308 since I went to sniper school. like Carl. We were raised on the 308 round. But what I learned after I was a sniper instructor, I learned that if I want to kind of copy that flat trajectory and everything, I will zero my 308s at 300 yards or an equivalent thereof, right? Just like Carl teaches, zero your 5.56 or your, you know, at 36 yards. Mm-hmm. Because now for 308, zeroed at 300 yards, if I'm aiming dead center, anything closer than 300 yards is just going to be just a little bit lower, you know, to the point of about 4.5, 5 inches. Anything past out to 480 or 500 meters is going to be a little bit higher or drop down or vice versa. I might have got that back. I think I did get that backwards. So yeah, 1 to 300 will be a little bit higher. But if you're aiming for your mass with 308 and you zero it at 300 yards, you stand a real good chance of hitting it any distance you're shooting at.
Okay.
For the East Coast, yeah.
No, that's my go-to as well. I've got a Remy 700 bull barrel. The AAC is the one I'm running. Bolt action Remington 700 AAC I really like.
Yeah, I've got a Remington 700 SPS. The only thing original to the rifle is the barrel and the chamber. Everything else on it's been changed.
I hate MPA. Put an MPA stock on it, and Atlas bipod, detached mag, and all the good stuff. I like the AAC because I like the heavy barrel for the accuracy side. Plus, that's the threaded barrel. You know, come threaded. The 700 AAC did.
So is the SPS. Same thing.
Oh, the SPS is too. I didn't realize that.
I hate to say it, but General Patton was right. The top invention for World War II anyway was the M1 Garand 30-06. Right, that 30. I don't know if you guys shot a lot of 30-06.
I have.
It kicks. I don't care if you got a Remington 7400 or
Garand.
It kicks, but that is a flat shooter. Right.
It is.
Yeah.
There, 600-700 meters. That thing will go straight out there.
We had a lever action 30-06 was our deer rifle growing up, and that was it'd kick like a mule.
Oh yeah, yep, yeah. You ain't got that mass absorbing velocity of the recoil and stuff. So you just eat it like shooting a bolt gun. You know, they're the ones with the worst recoil because you just take it all. But
then you have Mel. With the 45-70 shoulder killer.
And she loves a 50. She likes to get down behind a Barrett.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Then just shoot magazine after magazine of somebody else's ammo through it.
Because it's somebody else's wallet.
Like it's somebody else's ammo, man.
That's somebody else's ammo, best type of ammo. I'm down.
Whenever I have range days at the house, I have to keep my ammo put away in my truck to go over. I have to get my ammo out, fill my mags, and put my ammo away. Otherwise, everybody just assumes that if it's open on my tailgate, it's community ammo. This is how it's always looked
just
at.
Just reach in and grab a handful. That is it. So, man, I can't believe we're a week. We're barely just a little over a week out from Mountain Readiness, man. I've been humping, trying to get stuff together, putting stuff up. Yeah. See, I'm bringing what we got. Mountain Readiness on Saturday. Good. They want to pick up some books and get your order. There you go, man. They're needing autographs there, Chris.
Well, we're leaving the 28th. We'll be up there that evening. So I got to get some new tires, put on this camper real fast. I went out and bought the wheel today and replaced one because I destroyed one of them in that little incident. And that fucking wheel cost me $419.
Oh my gosh, are you serious?
I'm like,
for a steel wheel?
No. This is a mag wheel that came on the camper. This ain't a steel wheel.
Oh.
This is what comes, you know, what came on. $419 fucking. I'm like, does it say Porsche on the side of it? I'm like, what the hell are we doing here? And then I've got a good four new tires because I'm putting 10 plies all the way around now before I leave this time. Get the brake service on before I take off. So, but yeah,
My, that's, yes. I don't know. Do you know what you hit when you blew them tires up, man?
Well, one went way before the other because there was nothing left of it. The second one blew when I turned into the campground. I heard it, but.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah.
Well, at least it blew right then. That would have really sucked if it had done it while you were cruising down the road. I mean, that's a.
And we were in the mountains, too. I mean, it was.
Oh, man, that'd been horrible.
There was nowhere to go. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been horrible. Well, I'm not glad it happened, but I'm glad it happened when you was turning in. Because yeah, that too. Really yeah. did. That's huge right there.
Because it was also like 7 o'clock in the evening. You know what I'm saying?
And that's like, that. Yeah. Yeah, who wants to piss with that kind of stuff at 7 o'clock at night? After driving all day.
And you're in the mountains of Georgia, so you know there ain't fuck all nothing open except maybe nothing. Walmart. Maybe Walmart. So
yeah.
So
if that.
But the guy that owned the campground was super cool. He helped me out. We got it set up. I got new tires, you know, put on it, and so we're home and we're unloading it. We decided we've got way more shit inside of that thing than we need, so we are unloading immense amounts of things out of there to make it lighter. So
I mean, I don't know. Better to have it and not need it, you know. Well, you give them 10-ply tires.
Yeah, well, I'll take 10-ply tires. But it's like we're opening up drawers and cabinets. Like, have we ever touched anything in here? No, all of this has come out of there. We've never touched it, never used anything here. In the 2 years, it's out of here. I mean, we never used it. 2 years, we're not going to use it. So.
Right. So,
except for some kit things, they're going to be there regardless. But
you got to have that. Yeah, no, you got to have that.
Yeah.
So y'all's going to look. What is the 28th? 28th is Monday. You guys going to be down Monday then?
Yeah. I guess so.
Right on.
That's the day. That's the day we depart. So get up there and do that. So we'll be around. Where are you guys staying, Sue? Are you going to camp on site or what are you guys doing?
Well, Charlie's bringing in a camper, but I think his wife is coming with him. Okay. And my neighbor Troy is bringing a camper. But I think I'm just going to go out and buy one of them $100. I saw some guys at Charlie and I's last tracking class. They had a real nice tent they spent $100 on. And you could, for a guy that's as tall as I am, I like to walk into a tent and take my clothes off, not get on my knees and scooch in there and then sit on my knees and get undressed to get in the sleeping bag.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go check out these $100 tents at Walmart. You know,
And
if Carl gets mad at me over it, then I really won't be upset. It's $100. That means I'm going to steal. I've been trying to steal Carl's trailer for years.
He locks it with screws around.
I keep hearing about this thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm the reason that Carl puts a boot on his trailer.
Yeah.
He knows I'm going to back up to it and haul off with it.
I'm going to check this thing out. It must be awesome.
Oh, it is.
He even keeps the entry doors locked so Sue can't get in and roll around in this bed.
And just so you know, Byron just texted me. He said, ain't no better tent than a hotel room.
And ain't that the truth, Byron? Now you're talking my speed.
That's why I'm going to camper. Nailed it.
Yeah, I like my camper. Too. I don't mind that. But
yeah.
I'm starting to agree with Byron. You know, we got enough time playing this army crap. You know,
yeah, that's why I've got a real nice camper, man. That's why I've got that nice camper to.
Amber and I rented one. We got a camper. Amber told me she's not sleeping in no tent. She said, I had 8 back surgeries. I ain't gonna have 9. I said, all right, rent an RV. Let's do it.
Yeah, you can't really argue on that one.
Amber and I agree. Emery and I shared a tent down there in Palatka next to Carl's trailer, and it rained that night.
Oh, sweet.
Yep.
We didn't get rained on, but we woke up in a puddle of water. The water came through the bottom of the tent, and both of us were soaked. You know, so
that's what they say. We all thought it was sweat.
Yeah. You know, I went to – you guys ever heard of Eldora Speedway in Ohio? It was rated one of the fastest dirt tracks in the in the United States.
What's up? And just gonna look it up now. New members. There we go.
Sweet. No, I was saying Eldora Speedway. I went out there with a buddy of mine, and he was from Hazard, Kentucky. Labeling people. I'm not labeling people, but I'm gonna tell you that most people from Hazard, Kentucky are pretty crazy, to say the least. And so we went to Eldora, and I tried to outdrink a 90-pound girl from Louisiana, which was a stupid mistake, because it appears that not only do 90-pound girls from Louisiana know how to drink, they know how to drink a lot. And I ended up bouncing into every – I didn't even make it through qualifying of the race. And I'm staggering out, and I'm bouncing back and forth. I ended up in somebody else's camp even. And they were like, "What are you doing in our camp, dude?" I'm like, look, bro, I'm just trying to get back to my bed." He's like, "Have a beer." So, you know, I drank a beer with them, and then I'm really bad off. I finally get to the tent. I collapse on the floor. My buddy Bobby Maupin from Hazard, Kentucky, I hear him stammering in, you know, a few hours later. I woke up in the morning, and we were camped on kind of a hill. It was just a downhill slope. I woke up, and the whole side of me was soaked. And then I realized that Bob pissed the bed in the middle of the night.
Oh, God damn.
And I happened to be on the lower end of the tent. And I was like, "Oh my God, you got to be shitting me, man." You know, I crawl out of this tent, half covered in piss. And I look up, and here's this 90-pound Louisiana girl sipping on a bottle of Jim Beam at like 8 a.m. And I was like, you know, don't ever do that ever again. I haven't. You know,
good morning, ma'am. You know, what else you gonna do?
I woke up, she looked at me, she said, "You want a sip?" I was like, "Bleh." I mean, that was
yeah, you fucked around and found a pro.
Yeah, I messed up. Sometimes you mess up. That was one of those times.
Sometimes you mess up.
But that's look, if you share a tent, people, if you share a tent, take a part of your kit should be a little bitty one of them little torpedo levels. Put the level on the floor of the tent and don't sleep on the lower end. The end. That's all you got to remember. Sleep on the higher end.
Every time Emery and I go on a joint training exercise or a joint training class and we get stuck in like an army barracks or something, I tell him I get the top bunk. And finally, after about three of these trips, he's like, "Why do you always take the top bunk? You're old. It takes you forever to get up there." And I was like, "Because I pee the bed."
Sooner or later.
One of these nights, I'm going to get you.
Why is this thing leaking? What is going on?
I could just see it happening to him, too. And the possibilities of reactions are pretty hilarious.
It's like a Chinese water torture. He just starts getting this drip between his eyes.
From everything from him absolutely spazzing out to him just going, "Fucking Sue," and rolling over going to sleep. But not even bothering to get up. Like that's the range it could be in for him, you know. I mean,
yeah. Oh yeah.
It depends on how tired you are. Or drunk.
Yeah. Yeah, those would definitely come into play for sure. Especially that last one. Because he might not even notice that last one. All right. I know we're getting close to the final time and the things are about to happen, but we are going to go ahead and run the Mount Readiness ad one more time leading up to
it. One more time.
Y'all got to be there. It's fixing to happen. Run that time.
We still got next Wednesday.
Oh, we do have next Wednesday. We will have next Wednesday. All right. So still counting down. This is only the, you know, two more. This is it. One more time.
Yeah. The next Wednesday.
And if I know better, I think this is being put on by some like Fortune 500 company. The quality of that advertising right there
was. It kind of looked like Alan Kay there in that little bushcraft hut too. Remind me of Alan Kay on Alone. Had his little parka on. He was chiseling away. So, hey, yeah, Justin Stevens. He's asking about that camping. Look here, Justin. There, if the only spot you got to reserve is if you got an RV spot, and I think they're about gone. I don't even know if we have any RV. There's only maybe one or two, if that. I don't even think that. I think every single spot is rented. So if you are tent camping, it's 106 acres. You don't have to reserve a spot. All you got to do is call the number that's on our website. That's the campground owner, and tell him that you're going to tent camp and how many days you're going to be there. That's it. And that's all there is. You just tell him what you're going to do, and we'll I trust me, this place is huge. You can find a place to put a tent. There is not an issue. We can. This place actually had 90,000 people at it in like 1970 with the Fiddler's Convention. There was almost 100,000 people at that campground. So there's plenty of room, guys.
Yeah, there's loads of room there. So I know some plenty of folks are going to be tent camping, so it's going to be pretty cool. We're going to have a good time. I mean, yes. I know we're going to have a good time. So
it's going to be a blast.
What's that? Yeah, it'll be a blast. Oh, yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, because, you know, we're going to the third one now. We've got a couple reps under our belt. It's getting a little better each time. You know, we're getting a pretty nice crowd of folks that are coming as far as
speakers,
instructors, and the events that are going on. And you're improving your trade show appearance. You know what I'm saying? You got the big center tent now, like that. So up in the game.
Big center tent, lights.
Sound
system. We got lights. We got sound system. Look here, y'all. We even have... So the main tent is a 30 by 60 big top, lights all over it, a 16-foot stage in it, and we got a 75-inch television that's setting on this for the movie. Seats for Generation is going to be doing his documentary, Jason Matias. And that's that Q&A you're going to be on. And Daniel Salton's going to be there for a Q&A after the airing. So we're going to air this on this 75-inch screen we've got there for the stage sound system. It's going to be a blast. We got a lot of stuff going. The folks, I want to give a shout out to Redmond Salt. The folks at Redmond Salt is coming down to hang out with us. So they're going to be there, and they're going to actually do a little speaking. I believe it's the grandson of the actual founder of Redmond Salt. So we just found that out today, and which is huge because everybody knows that salt is super important when it comes to grid down.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's critical, and not even just for that, but for daily life in general, salt's kind of important.
That's it. You want a can, you got to have salt. You want to just food taste worth a damn, you got to have salt. Lots of people have lost their lives over salt throughout the years.
Yeah, if you don't want to dehydrate, you're gonna need salt. So
you need salt.
I'm gonna cut us a little short tonight, guys, because my back is killing me and I gotta get off this stool. I just can't sit here any longer. I'm about to die. So
thank you.
One more week. We'll do this one more time, gents, and then we'll all be hanging out in Harmony, North Carolina for Mountain Readiness. I can't wait.
I can't wait. And if you don't, and if you're not there, well, it's because you suck. And we don't want you there anyway, because we don't want people that suck there.
That's right. We don't want people that suck there. So, Sue, you're coming, right? Making sure, because you heard what he said. You know,
I don't suck.
Cool. We want the cool
kids. That's why you got to be there. You got because you don't suck, so you got to come.
Yeah, come hang out with the cool kids. That's what it's about.
That's what it's about.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. So you got anything you want to leave everybody with tonight?
No, I'm sorry we lost Joe. We're going to have to give him a reboot some other weekend.
Oh, yeah. We'll get him on another time. No big deal.
Not only that, he's going to be at Mountain Readiness with us.
That's right.
So
come hang out with him.
Yeah.
Come hang out with him. You can always do that. So you guys got a drill. Till next time, be good. Be good at it. We'll catch you on the other side.
Boom.
And